Welcome back. Now, we're getting some feedback. We're always, of course, amenable to feedback. Was that a short break? What happened? 6?
Oh.
12, 13, 14? No. 15 minutes?
No, that was normal. Yeah.
We're getting some feedback. There's still a couple folks out of the room, though, aren't there?
One person over there. This chair is empty. I don't know why is this chair empty, but it's empty.
Oh, that chair is empty, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're getting some feedback that some folks who didn't study with us are already getting a bit lost. So, listen, we're going through this day, today, right now, with regards to demos for you. If you don't ask questions, if you're lost already and you don't ask questions, that's on you.
Please ask all the questions you need to ask in order to know whatever you need to know.
If we're saying some things you don't understand,
just ask.
You need to ask questions. If I don't get any questions, I will assume you understand it, and I will move on. But the purpose of the... We didn't used to do this in trainer's training. We used to just say, do the demo. Now we have a whole half a day, well, actually 3/4 of a day, on how to do a successful demonstration and how to pass demo day. So if you don't understand what's going on, then get... This is your hand. And this is your hand going up.
Ted, I don't understand. Adriana, help you.
I got a nice crank there, yeah? And so you have to raise your hand and ask us the questions if you don't understand what the hell's going on. Because the purpose of this is for you to pass your demo. That's why you have to ask. So ask. Yes? Okay, good. Now, are there any questions so far? Yes. Yes. Now, we haven't gone through contrastive analysis or mapping across yet. We're gonna go over that. Okay. This basic submodality.
So pre-qualifying for submodalities.
Let's talk about pre-qualifying for that particular demo of submodalities. So what's the question you'd ask? Well, you'd certainly want someone who had visual submodalities that were clearly sorted out. You wouldn't want someone who said, I don't have a picture when they got a print. That's usually what I do, yeah. Yeah.
So usually we do like this. Elicitation of a internal representation of picture that represents motivation.
So, can you remember a time you were totally motivated? Yeah. Now, watch...
The next question is...
Their eyes.
Watch their eyes.
Can you remember a time you were totally motivated? If they go down to kinesthetic, that may not be the person to pick. Now, I like that little thing. That little thing you do before teaching submodalities, which is motivation, yeah? It's on the CDs, actually.
Remember the motivation? When they have a picture of motivation, then you shrink it down, you make it a stage of the size of a postage stamp, you put it inside the dot on the wall. And then you ask now whoever how many people feel more motivated?
So it goes like this. Can you remember a time you were totally motivated? Good, good. Can you go back to that time, float down in your body, see what you saw, hear what you... By the way, I want to point out that this is the way you elicit a state. Just so that you know that I know, yeah? This is not the way you elicit submodalities, but this is the way you pre-qualify your audience for the submodalities demo.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so what you say is, can you remember, okay, everybody, by the way, I'm not saying this, is what you say. Yeah, so do not do what we're telling you to do right now. So what you say is, okay, everybody, can you remember a time you're totally motivated? Can you remember a specific time? Go back to that time, float down in your body, see what you saw, hear what you heard, and feel the feelings of being totally motivated. That's in the script for state elicitation.
Yeah, everybody got it?
Good, everybody got it? Okay. They go, yeah. You say, good. Now, take the picture. You look at your audience and you say, take the picture. And some people are going like this. Picture? I don't...
Yep.
Take the picture. You say, take the picture, zoom it out, make it small and dark, the size of a postage stamp, so you can see your body in the picture, and put it right on that dot there. Then you say, okay, how many people feel less motivated? Guess who you don't pick? Somebody who didn't raise their hand at that point. Yeah, so the purpose of that, the neat thing about that is it does double duty. Because then you say, okay, now, have that picture come zooming toward you at 100 miles an hour till it hits you, bam, and you're in it. Okay, one, two, three, whoop, or make up some other noise. Don't use whoosh. That has a specific process. Yeah. So you go whoop, and they're okay, I'm in it. Okay, now who feels more motivated? Do pick someone who feels more motivated, because that means that the visual shift of distance and location worked very well for that person. That's a pre-qualify for the first submodalities demo. We'd like you to pre-qualify. Well, let me put it to you this way. In the past, some people who haven't pre-qualified their demo subjects have been less than totally successful. That's a warning. Yes. And you'll be in a group with another group.
However, please do not, and I'm sorry to say this, please do not arrange demonstration subjects.
If you pre-arrange a demonstration subject and you coach them how to respond, that will be counted as cheating.
We're pretty good in sensory.
So it goes like this. Bassam, I'm going to teach chaining anchors. I'm going to teach collapse anchors, so I want you to volunteer. When I say collapse anchors, you go, yeah. And then when we collapse the anchors, you go, whoa, that was big. That would be cheating. Yeah, so don't do that. You can practice with the people in your group, which I would recommend. Practice your demos.
Oh, yeah. Practice all the demos.
But I would not pre-set up a subject to do the demo with me if I were you. Because that'll be cheating.
We said at the beginning of this training, you'd like to know that you know how to do demos. That would be the purpose of this.
The other thing is you won't be in the same group anyway that you're in now. So hopefully there's no way you can figure that out. Yes. If you do the demo per the script and it doesn't work with the person, you don't pass.
You don't pass. Nope.
Right.
You have to succeed.
Well, you're going to be a trainer. Have you seen us demo anything up here that didn't succeed? The answer is no. You haven't. Yes. Yes. If you get halfway through and you realize it's the wrong subject, it would be better for you to call time out. You can call time out. You can say, look, I picked the wrong person. Can we switch? And absolutely, you can switch.
You can switch. It won't count against you. So it's better to call time out, because then we know you realize what's happening, rather than insist in going on and on and on the wrong subject. And when you will be picked as a demonstration subject, be honest. Is the problem gone or not?
We'll ask you to be honest. And furthermore, I want you to know that our skills of calibration are quite good. So we'll know anyway if it didn't work. And so will your group. Your group will know if it didn't work. Yeah?
So we had an example this time in California, a lady who was very well prepared. However, she was a mismatch. So whatever we said, do it this way. She said, nope, I'll do it the other way. So I gave her, it was in my group, and I did demonstrations with that group, and she had to do mapping across. So as we move into mapping across, contrastive analysis and mapping across, I said to her, you need to make sure you know exactly the distance and the location of the picture. You make sure you anchor it with your hand.
Listen
now.
There. This is part
please,
of the,
please pay attention.
This is part of, we've now moved into contrastive analysis and mapping across. This isn't just a metaphor.
So this is what you need to do. So when the client says, yes, I got a picture, and you ask, where is it? And the client goes, it's right in front of me, right here.
Then what you do is you put your hand
you
there.
You take your hand.
And you put it right there, and you say.
Is it right
then
here?
Then she
is
puts
it
her
here?
Hand down, and you say, is
even
it right
there?
Even
if they there? Have their eyes closed, they'll feel your hand next to their hand. And you say, right here. Yeah. And they go, yeah, maybe a bit further back. Yeah. Right,
ask
right
them
there.
Move your hand out. That anchors the picture to your hand. When you're doing either contrastive analysis or mapping across, anchor the picture to your hand.
However, you don't teach your students that.
Do not teach your students this.
You do this. You don't teach your students this. This is for the level of trainer. This is also true if the picture is somewhere on the floor. It
By the
says,
way,
okay, it's over there. Where? Right there where is that white spot on the floor.
So
and
you
walk there physically and you say, it's right here. And they go, no, further back. Okay, right. Oh, yeah, right here. And you point right there. Very important. So this lady decided that that wasn't the case.
Well, she was a mismatch.
So her demonstration subject said, the picture's right there on the floor. Where? And she said it was a pattern on the carpet. And she said, where is that pattern over there? And the trainer didn't pay any attention. So when she did the mapping across, she said, okay, take the picture and put it there. Now, there wasn't here.
She goes
and
like
unfortunately,
this with
the driver was location. So at the end, she asked the client, okay, when you think now of whatever she wanted to...
She did a perfect demo.
She did. The rest of the demo was perfect.
Except the driver was location and she missed it.
So when you think now of eating, I don't know, whatever it was, could you eat it? And the demo subject said, yes.
Well, quite frankly, she says, I think I could. That's not a successful mapping across. Yeah. So let's go back now and get more specific.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about contrastive analysis and mapping across. First of all, let's explain what the difference between yes. Then don't reach it.
Then you make sure you're specific. So it's on the back wall. Where on the back wall? Right there. Oh, right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. No.
No.
Walk there.
Walk there, point it,
get
anchor
the right
it.
Position, then go back.
The and point is to anchor it.
Yeah. Yes. If there's no difference in both of the locations, you've picked the wrong subject. So let me tell you how to pick the right subject. You ready? For contrastive analysis and mapping across.
Pre-qualifying for contrastive analysis and mapping across.
So we'd like to do a demonstration of either, you can say either one, mapping across or contrastive analysis. Who has something they like but wish they didn't? Who has something they, and who would like, who has something they'd like to, they like but they wish they didn't like it? And then you have people raise their hand. So the people raise their hand. You go, good. So...
Okay,
let's say Adriana raises her hand. So, okay, so can you think of the thing you like?
Yep.
As you think of how much you like that, do you have a picture?
Yep.
Good. Where is it?
Here.
Great. Can you think of the thing you dislike? Now, she's in the audience. Can you think of the thing you dislike?
Yep.
Where is it?
Up there.
Then okay. You say, good, give her a hand, come on up. If she says...
this is a difference, yeah? If the second picture would be... So first picture's here, second picture's here.
You never thought so much went into teaching NLP. Now you're realizing all the things
What's
we did during the trainings you took. Absolutely. Now, so if Adriana says, yeah, the thing I like is right here, and then she says, the thing I dislike is right here, what do you say? Thanks for volunteering. I just want to make sure I get the right person. Can we have somebody else? If the location is different, pick a different demo subject. If the location isn't different, sorry, pick a different demo subject. Yep. So it's important with these two things to anchor each of the things to your hand to assist the client to anchor them and make the change. And to make sure this demo really works, it's important that the location of the two things are substantially different.
So what we just demonstrated, you do while the client is still in the audience. So you make sure the two pictures are on a different location, and they're widely separated.
But you're going to ask them, when you're pre-qualifying, can you think of the thing you like but wish you didn't? Good. As you think of that, do you have a picture? Yes, good. Where is it located? You're not going to elicit all the sub-modalities. You're just going to go, where is it? Or just say, where is it? That will ensure a perfect demo on contrastive analysis and on mapping across. You want? I mean, if you want, do you want to do it? You want to do a perfect demo, right? Yeah. Okay. Good. Just making sure.
Now, another question you need to ask in pre-qualifying is, what is it? So they have, yes, I have a thing that I like and wish I didn't. And then you ask, good, what is it?
What is it?
See, sometimes students will come with an answer like sugar. Now, sugar is way it goes cross-contextual.
What is sugar not in? No, I'm serious.
No, really. Nowadays, sugar is everywhere.
Adriana bought some really delicious mashed up olives.
Oh, olives, yeah. But
here in Australia, mashed up olives. And she looks at the labels, got sugar in it.
We bought Hawaiian salt
in Hawaii.
And it had sugar.
And it had sugar in the salt. I mean, what? So if a client says, I like sugar, but I wish I didn't, the problem is there's too many instances of sugar. And sugar is in almost everything. So in order to solve that problem in a measurable way, with a massive before and after shift, you're going to have to do 20 maybe or 30 different submodalities shifts, because it would be sugar in the coffee, sugar on
cakes,
sugar in cakes, sugar on
and different types of
fruits.
Cakes if the person's jumped down and codes differently.
Way too many. So sugar is not a good bet. That's a bad bet. The other thing you want to make sure is what is it? Can you think of something so when you're asking for the volunteer, what is it? You want to make sure that they're of the same logical type. For example, drinking beer and gasoline. That's a similar logical type. But here's a rule of thumb. Unless it's been in the person's mouth, you're not going to get the sharp kinesthetics that you really need for beer and gasoline. Now, on the CDs, we did chocolate and dog poo. I thought it was a little much, but what I knew of that client was that when she was a kid, oh, never mind. And plus, chocolate is the same, similar color, similar consistency as, anyway. But you, in order to get the really sharp, solid kinesthetics, you want two things that have been in the mouth if you're doing food. Now, your students will also say, can we do dislike to like during this exercise?
Before you go into that. So you're looking for somebody who says, yes, I dislike that. And if they have a solid kinesthetic when they think of that, like they're almost ready to barf, that's a perfect
demo subject. Oh, I hate liver. So when you think of liver, do you have a picture? And they go like this. Yup.
Ugh.
Good subject.
That's good.
Good subject. Yeah. Too broad.
So you need something really contextualized.
You need something highly contextualized. Like, I'd like to not put sugar in my coffee. Well, actually, that's a behavior. It's not a like to dislike. It's a behavior. You probably want to do a switch pattern for that.
I like very much donuts. That's a clear thing. Contextualized.
Donuts, yeah.
I like too wide.
Yeah, no, specific kinds of alcohol. It may be too wide.
Also, there may be, for alcohol, it may be not enough to do just the submodality shift to...
Alcohol usually is a rather complex
effect,
issue anyway.
Yeah.
Would pick someone else. If I'm doing a demo now, you're probably asking me therapeutic questions, and I would do, of course, with a client, but for a demo, what you want is somebody that gags on the food they dislike, and they are okay with letting go of the food they like. For example, I had one client come up. I say, chocolate. She gets up on the stage. She's got a chocolate and I don't remember what. Chocolate. And she comes up on the stage and I go, so are you ready to let it go? And she goes, well, couldn't I just like chocolate a little less? And what do you think I said? Sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for volunteering. Go sit down. You demo subject somebody who's not congruent, guess what you're going to get? Not the result. So if you get
if somebody says, I don't want to like it so much.
Yeah, that's not congruent.
That's not congruent.
When you're doing the pre-qualifying, what is it you like but wish you didn't? And they say X. Good. So, and what is it you dislike? And they go, well, I really don't want to dislike. I don't want to get it out of my life totally. Wrong person. And a lot of people are incongruent. They want to let go of chocolate, but they don't want to. The question we always ask is, it all right with your unconscious mind for you to make this change today and for you to be aware of it consciously?
And you don't want anything less than a congruent yes.
And they go, yes. That's congruent. If they go, well, yeah, okay. Not congruent.
Not congruent.
Yeah. You all, I think whenever you ask any question before they come on stage, we said this previously in a previous pattern, but the question is, is it okay with you to make this change today and for you to be aware of it consciously? I would always ask, is it all right with your unconscious mind for you to make this change today and for you to be aware of it consciously? I would ask that for every time I demo a pattern. Even though it's a timeline therapy pattern, you always hear us ask that question before we get the client up on the stage.
So now for clarity, let's run again the pre-qualifying questions. So I'm about to do a demo on contrastive analysis or mapping across either one. So therefore, I would need the volunteer. Who has something like, preferably a food, something they really like and wish they didn't? People raise their hands. You pick somebody and ask, okay, what is it? They tell you what is it. Then you say, when you think of how much you like.
By the way, this, you might think we're overly nitpicky on this question.
We are.
When you think of the only question to ask with regards to this issue is, when you think of how much you like X, do you have a picture? No other question is acceptable.
So they say, yes, you ask, good. Where is it?
Yeah. Well, what is it?
Where is it?
Yeah.
We passed, what is it?
Oh, what is it? Oh, yeah, good. What is it? Where is it?
Now it's, where is it? Then you say, okay, now do you have something similar, a food which you absolutely dislike? They go, yes. You ask, what is it? Again, you're looking for the same logical type. They say, this. Fine. Then you say, when you think of how much you dislike
X,
do you have a picture? They go, yes. Then you ask, where is it? If the location is different,
good.
That's a good subject. Then you ask them, before you bring them up, you ask them, is it all right for your unconscious mind
to
let go of this pattern, to make the change today, and for you to be aware of it consciously? They go, yes. Fine. That's a perfect demo subject. Bring them up.
You never knew that all this was going on, did you? You want to be the best NLP trainer you can possibly be, right? Mm-hmm. This is not a script. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No?
I said, can you think of something? When you think of how much you like X, do you...
No, listen. Is there something in your life you dislike but wish you didn't? Yes.
Preferably a food.
Good. When you think of that, do you have a picture? No. Correct. Yes. I'm asking you to add two more words to that script. Not for the students, for you. When you just add these two words. When you think of how much you like or dislike chocolate, do you have a picture?
Huh? When you think of how much you like or dislike, in case of the other picture.
Do you have a picture? This is precision NLP, by the way.
And this is out of experience, because when you think of how much, when you think of X, do you have a picture, may elicit a different picture from when you think of how much you like X.
May. Probably won't. May. Certainly, can you make a picture of chocolate? Can you make a picture of chocolate is probably not going to elicit the picture that represents how much they like chocolate. Do you understand the difference in the words?
Me too. No, you just add two words.
Just add those two words.
Just add two words. You don't have to change anything.
And quite frankly, Bassam, even if you did it the other way and your demo succeeded, you'd pass. Yes. Absolutely the wrong person. By the way, a lot of people who are kinesthetic and proud of it will say, I don't have a picture, I have a feeling. We consider in this little branch of NLP that that's baloney. Here's what Erickson said. Erickson said kinesthetic is a derived representational system and must absolutely come off of a visual or an auditory.
Now, the visual and auditory may be out of awareness.
But someone who insists on having a kinesthetic first, don't bring them up. They're the wrong person. Because you know what happens if you do demo and they say, I don't have a picture? Half your audience won't have a picture. And all the kinesthetics will go like this, yay, finally.
Yeah.
Like what? That's not the same logical type. Unless it's been in the mouth, but I'd rather it was a food. If they gag on it, I might use it. It depends on how I felt at the time. But it probably should be the same logical type if you can do it. If you're teaching your students to look for the same logical type, you probably ought to do the same logical type if you can. Either one. But that's before they come up. That's before they come up. Because you're going to find out, good, something you absolutely dislike, what is it? They're going to say sawdust. You say, anything else other than sawdust that you dislike? What food do you dislike? Okay.
So are we clear with the pre-qualifying for contrastive analysis and mapping across?
The pre-qualification for contrastive analysis and mapping across is the same.
Assam, are you clear with this now?
No? Are you? Yes.
Good.
Okay, all the people that didn't study with us, you need to raise your hand and tell me if you're not clear. Because I've got feedback that you guys are already running into, oh my God, I don't get it. Do you guys get this? It won't count against you, I promise. It'll count against you if you fail demo day. If you raise your hand now, it won't be a problem. Okay. Yes. I'm giving you my best shot at how to get results after, what year is this? Almost 20 years of teaching NLP at the practitioner level. Yeah, I'm trying to save you 20 years because when I first started off, I said, great, chocolate, can you make a picture of chocolate? I said that. And then what I noticed over time was that sometimes can you make a picture of chocolate just didn't work. So now I not only say, when you think of chocolate, do you have a picture? I now also say, at the trainer level, when you think of how much you like chocolate, do you have a picture? How much you like is only four more words than what you know. Because it makes you look like I'm the smart guy and you're the lowly practitioner and you could never learn this. You don't want to tell this. You want to tell the practitioner why you're finding out the location. I've seen trainers do this. Okay, now here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pre-qualify my demo subject by finding out exactly what. Oh, and then they go like this. And I'm anchoring her behind the back.
It's too much. It's overload. It's way too much information, too much detail.
Way
for
too many more behaviors than they could
they
possibly
don't need
do. Good. Now you realize what's wrong. Good.
Cool.
Okay. Good. Good.
Well, in order
what
to find out.
What information specifically did you wish you had? What information specifically? Okay, I apologize for that. Oh. Okay, I want to hear it. I admit we added four more words to the script. I admit that. I will also tell you that you don't know what my problems are of changing scripts in notebooks. Yeah? So they haven't been changed. I admit that. I have said to some practitioner trainings in the past year, add the words in how much you like. I have said that. If I didn't say it at your practitioner training, I certainly apologize. Now tell me where else you have a problem. Okay. We said that.
It's in the script.
It's in the script. Exactly, and they're not going to listen. You could stand on your head and pour water out of your mouth into a bucket, and they still wouldn't listen. You could stand on your head, you could jump up and down, you could take off your clothes and run around the room naked, and the students still wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
the thing about practitioners, you got to keep it simple. If you get it really complicated, like you say, watch out for this, watch out for this, watch out for this, watch out for this, watch out for this. And by the time you get up to like
you
that.
You are in overload now as a trainer.
You're a trainer, for Christ's sake. And you're in overload. You can't tell all this stuff to the practitioners. You got to keep it really, really simple for them.
And number one, I'm absolutely confident. Number one on the script, decide on the first and last states.
I can show it. I can put that on the screen right now, and you'll see where it says decide the first and last states.
I promise you it's there.
And you didn't think that was that important? Well, I don't know what is important. Mapping across we don't use for behaviors. What do you use for behaviors, class? Switch pattern, right. Okay. Even at practitioner, we say behaviors is for swish. It says on the script.
And we always
say. That's why
say.
It's on the script. And we always say it. A swish pattern is for a state, a minor state, or a minor behavior.
Also,
mapping across is not for behaviors.
I promise you, even in your master practitioner, we had the discussion because people were doing don't like to like. So if you say, now I have a client who comes and says, I don't like this and I want to like that, I would say, don't do it. It's an ecology.
Somebody asked us in your class, but why can't we do it?
Because it's an ecology issue. If somebody doesn't like a person or doesn't like a food, to force themselves to like it may be going against what the body needs.
And the students listen to what extent they listen. And if you don't keep, and if you complicate the issues, what's going to happen is you're going to make it really complicated. So the reason why you're learning this now as a trainer is so you can be an impeccable trainer. We don't expect our practitioners to be impeccable. That might shock the hell out of you, but we don't expect them to be impeccable. We expect them to be able to get the pattern done and get it done right for the most part. And if there are some few things we don't tell them, there's no possible way you could put all those in there because what's going to happen is they're going to get confused and overloaded. Okay. Yes. Is it okay?
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna dictate it right now. So get your pen out. Here we go. Is it okay with your unconscious mind for you to make this change today and for you to be aware of it consciously? And that's in your timeline therapy handouts, for those of you that took timeline therapy. Is it okay with your unconscious mind for you to make this change today and for you to be aware of it consciously? By the way, Bassam, I did say in your class to ask that question before you do every NLP technique. I did say it. Yes. But people don't do it. So
you'll see when you start training.
You'll see. We have real cases, too. We see clients on a regular basis.
I'm sorry to ask. How many other people didn't understand that you have to decide on the first and last state for chaining anchors?
Okay, so how many people did not understand you have to decide the first and last state for chaining anchors? Okay, so you're the only one in the room that didn't understand that. Okay, well, your language is a little sloppy right now. I just want to point that out to you. When you say vivid to the client, that assumes visual. We're talking about chaining anchors. We will talk about chaining anchors when we get to it, but you're talking about chaining anchors now. We're not even far enough along I'm willing to have you guys determine the order and sequence of this, but it may run longer than 8 o'clock. I want you to know that at this moment, we're in danger of running long in this segment, just so you know, because we've spent about half an hour on contrastive analysis and mapping across, just so you know. So let's see. So I apologize for any oversight that may have occurred during your practitioner and master practitioner training. What I taught on purpose so that to keep it simple and so that the people would get the best results. I promise you, if you overload them with what could go wrong, you'll overload them and they won't use the pattern. You need to keep it really simple. I know you don't believe me now. I can tell that from the look on your face. But what I want, I promise you that if you keep it simple, you'll get better results than if you overly complicate it. And the only reason we're going through this is because I want you as a trainer to succeed with your demos. Okay. Now, yes. No. As you think about how much you like X, do you have a picture? Yeah. Okay.
Then you bring the subject on stage. You're done with the pre-qualifying. You bring the subject on stage. And you ask again the questions. So you said before that you've got this X you really, really like. Good. As you think of how much you like this X, do you have a picture? They go, yeah. And you go again, where is it? In that moment, you anchor it. Then you go and elicit all the submodalities very quickly. Then you elicit the submodalities of the food they dislike. In contrastive analysis, then you analyze the differences and you point out the possible drivers. I emphasize possible drivers.
In contrastive analysis, you point out the possible drivers.
You don't know if they're really the drivers until you do the shift or the change. So you emphasize these are possible drivers.
You won't know the actual drivers until you map across.
So that will conclude your contrastive analysis demonstration.
If you've got the slide set, you'll notice that it actually says that. Let me see if I can get the slide set up real quickly. If you've got the slide set, you'll notice it actually says possible drivers when talking about mapping across or contrastive analysis. Where is that? Let's see. No.
There it is.
So if you've actually got the slide set, what it says is drivers are hinted at by contrastive analysis. And then when you put them up, you say you have one picture in color, near, associated, and in the center, one picture, color, near, dissociated, and in the upper right. And then you say, what are the possible drivers? Then you hit the thing and it says possible drivers. Yeah. These are not the drivers. You don't know that they're the drivers until you map across.
So once you pointed out the drivers and the differences, your contrastive analysis demonstration has ended. Now let's talk about mapping across. Mapping across goes the same way. So you do absolutely the same you've done until now. You don't point out the drivers. You don't discuss it. You just elicit both sets of submodalities. And then you map over the submodalities of the food they like and wish they didn't into the submodalities of the food they dislike.
You want to be real precise about your languaging of this issue as a trainer. One of the things you don't say is change the picture of the thing you like into the thing you dislike. A lot of trainers say that, and it's very confusing, because what you're going to do is you're going to get people mapping across content.
And you're going to end up with a donut on top of a plate of seaweed.
That actually might be good. I think there's a dish in Japan which does that already. There's a market for it. If what do you say instead? What you say is you change the submodalities of number one, that's the one on the left there, into the submodalities of number two. So always use the word submodality. So you could say you change the submodalities of the thing you like but wish you didn't into the submodalities of the thing you totally dislike. This is just the description. This is not what you do.
You do it.
You
item
do it
by
item by item. But this is all we're doing now is giving you the description of how you say it. Yeah. So you want to be real precise with your language. These are some areas that you never thought we were this precise on, but we are definitely this precise.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. We're not saying anything that's not on the script.
But now we're giving you the why it has to be that way.
Yes.
No, you're not giving out handout.
You're not giving any handout. You will get the submodalities checklist as a handout when you do the demo. No. In the demo, you don't explain the steps.
Yes.
Right.
So now...
You don't have to explain the steps in the demo.
I know we...
On demo day. When you do it for real in a practitioner training, yes, you absolutely must explain the steps before you actually do the demo.
So where were we? Let's backtrack. So you elicit the submodalities. Then you say to the class, now I'm going to map across or change the submodalities of the picture representing the food they like but wish they didn't into the submodalities of the picture of what they dislike. And then I know we say that if you map across the drivers, it will carry across every other submodality. However, at the practitioner level, you map across all submodalities.
Well,
all visual submodalities.
Let's all the ones that are different.
Yes, all the ones that are different, obviously. Yeah.
So what you're going to say is, take it and put it in the same color as the thing you dislike. Take it and put it in the same location. Take it and have it be the same distance. Have it be the same movie.
When you get to location, you say, okay, so now...
You actually take your hand...
Take it from here where let's suppose
Let's say I'm doing it, and let's say it was here and here. So what I'm going to do is say, okay, Adriana, now take it here and move it right out to here. So you actually, this is something you do as a trainer, yeah? You say, okay, take it from here and put it right out here, right there. Is that the right place?
Yeah.
Good. Yep. Yep. I'd get up. And I'd walk right down to the floor, and I'd go like this. Okay, take this and put it right down here. Is that the right place? Right there.
Yep.
Good, right there. Put it right there. Yep.
You just, if it's out of reach, it's beautiful because you
watch
take
this.
It from here.
Take it and bat it. So let's say it's over there on that speaker in the back of the room. So you go like this. Okay, take this and just put it out there. It's a great effect. It's like tennis. You say, take this picture and put it right out there. And the people go like this. It's great. Yeah? Okay. That's how you do mapping across.
You map across the visual submodalities.
Map across the visual and test the auditory and kinesthetic.
Test the auditory and the kinesthetic.
Ooh. Sure.
So you map across
the
visual.
When it's out there, here's the words. When it's out there, does it have the same sound as the thing you dislike? Yes. When it's out there, does it have the same feeling that you dislike?
And at this point, they should go, bleh.
They should gag, yeah.
If the auditory and or kinesthetic didn't map across, you map them across.
So you test, and if it didn't map across, you're going to have to map them across. But that's a really solid way of you as a trainer knowing that it worked, because it'll carry the auditory and the kinesthetic submodalities with the shift in location. Yeah. That's the only ones that fit. The way you go down the submodalities checklist is you go down all the visual ones, and then you say, are there any sounds that are important?
It's
that's
the
actually
box
on the submodalities checklist. Are there any sounds that are important? And they go, yes. And you go, good, where are they, et cetera. And then you say, are there any feelings that are important? You do that for both of them.
Even if one of the pictures has no sounds, you still elicit the second picture's sounds if there are sounds.
Are there any sounds that are important to this picture? Yes. Well, what's the difference in the sound? Is it location? Is it volume? Is it?
So you just say, make it louder. Make it louder. Make sure the sound's external and comes from your right side. You
make
just
sure
say, make it
location.
This way. You just tell them what to do. And by the way, at this point in time, when you do the submodalities shift, please understand that you are not permissive. Hmm. You understand what I mean when I say you're not permissive? You're not asking them, maybe they can
do
it.
This? Can you do
it?
This? Can you do this?
Please,
you say,
do you want to do it? No.
Do it.
You just say, make it that way, and you do it very fast. I promise you, at the end of this day, Bassam, you'll be clear. you're feeling overload, and it's okay. I promise it.
Mm-hmm. No worries.
This is why you are now a trainer, and you're not just a practitioner or even a master practitioner.
Okay. Any questions on contrastive analysis and mapping across? I think we've given you our best. Good. Belief change. Did anybody choose belief change in the... I don't think anybody chose belief change for a subject. Belief change is one of the demos. However, we rarely pick it.
Very, very rarely.
It would be a cold day in Sydney, I think, before we picked it. I mean, a real cold day. I mean, a real cold, like zero.
Like snow.
Snow, yeah. Before we'd pick that, yeah. So, but in this demo also, be sure to anchor the submodalities distinctions to the trainer's hands. Make sure that the location of the unwanted belief and the belief which is no longer true are substantially different, and that there's a substantial difference between the new belief and the thing which is absolutely true. Okay.
Just one possible caveat and belief change. It's a complicated technique anyway. However, you need to be sure you elicit the true belief which is no longer true. Mm. So that goes like this. So,
here's an example.
Do you have a belief which is no longer true? For example,
Perhaps you used to be a smoker. So when you were a smoker, you believed, I am a smoker. But now you no longer smoke. So where is that belief of, I am a smoker? I believe I'm a smoker.
So please note, there is a difference between I am a smoker and I was a smoker. I was a smoker is a true belief for somebody who quit smoking.
So they might say, yes, I have a belief that's no longer true. I was a smoker. Do you hear the languaging difference? I was a smoker actually is true.
It's true. But I am a smoker for somebody who gave up is no longer true.
So you've got to be careful of the languaging of that if you ever demo it. And you may end up having to demo it sometime, because if you get curious students at the master practitioner level, and if you're not teaching timeline therapy, you'll probably have to demo the belief change.
I am age 10.
Yes, that would be correct.
That's a good belief no longer true.
If they can remember the belief. The problem with I am age 10 is very few of us remember where that belief was located when we were 10 of I am age 10. And I'm okay with that belief. Do you understand?
So you can ask them, for instance, what was the very first car you had?
What was the very first car you owned? First car you ever owned?
Your very first car.
Yeah. What was it?
So, what was it?
And was it new or used? What year was it?
So, when you first, as an example, when you own
a Holden now? Okay, so.
So, when you first bought that car, you said, I am
a Holden owner.
A Holder 1987.
Whatever.
Owner.
Where's that belief now? Of I am a Holden owner. That's more memorable than I am 10. Because I am 10 is too far back and they may not get the location. Yes. The problem is that how would you find that if you were asleep? Have you ever thought that when you were asleep? Exactly. That's a problem. That I am asleep is a problem to that. Yeah. So I am a smoker. Yes. I am a 19. I'm a Holden new car or a used car. I'm a Holden owner. Perfect. I am.
Unless they are still owning another Holden, yeah?
Yeah. If they own another Holden right now, then that's a problem for that car.
So I am a 1985 white Holden owner.
Or you could do a house. What was the first? Did you ever buy a house? They go, yeah, I used to own a house in Campsie. Now, where do you live now? I live on the other side. I live on the west side. So then you say, okay, so I am a homeowner. I'm a Campsie homeowner. That's easy for him to say. Yeah? And then, so that's a belief that would work because that's recent enough that they can get the location. What you want, though, is you want the location of the belief that's no longer true.
True.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like another one is it's good to breathe. I found that this one actually worked. It's good to breathe is a belief that's one that's absolutely true. That's one that's absolutely true. That's a good belief that's absolutely true. The sun's going to come up tomorrow is another belief that's absolutely true. You've got to find a distinct location for that one. Yes. It should be, yes, present tense. Both the belief that it used to be true and the belief that is true should be in present tense. Now, we make a big deal about that on the practitioner blue tape set. But unfortunately, you see, I stopped teaching the belief change because timeline therapy is much more efficient at changing beliefs than the NLP belief change, which is why we don't teach that anymore. But if you're teaching just straight NLP, you might have to be prepared to do this demo. But I don't think I would. I wouldn't demo a belief change personally as a trainer, even if students asked for it. Because if you know how to do mapping across, you know how to do a belief change. And the rule of thumb is only demo what they absolutely need to see. Okay. Those of you who didn't study with us, do you have any questions? I need some feedback because I don't want to hear tomorrow. I'm so confused. I want to hear it right now. So we can stay with it until you get the answers that you need. I don't want to hear scuttlebutt running through the training of I'm so confused, that discussion last night. Yes.
Probably I wouldn't choose that for a person who doesn't have excellent eyesight at the moment for ecological reasons. I wouldn't work with that because I might elicit, besides the picture, I might elicit some negative states.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, belief change changes limiting beliefs. Gets rid of limiting beliefs. And it puts in empowering beliefs in their place. The belief change is a four-step process. There's a script in your practitioner manual for it, which if you follow the script, it will go very well. In the belief change, what you do is you take a belief which you believe but wish you didn't, and you change that into a belief which is no longer true. Then you get the opposite.
Actually, let's be correct. You change the subtleties of a belief. Yeah. That's limiting you into the submodalities of a belief which is no longer true.
Then you get a belief which is absolutely true, and you change the opposite of the old belief into the submodalities of the belief which is absolutely true. That's essentially how you do a belief change.
Okay. Some mice in that speaker. That's all right.
Mycens.
Don't worry.
No, we're not going to worry about the mice.
Don't worry about the mice.
All righty. Okay. Yes. No, you do the timeline therapy process.
Limiting decision, as you remember, gets rid of all beliefs. A limiting decision may hold more than one limiting belief. But any limiting belief is preceded by a limiting decision. So by getting rid of the limiting decision, the belief goes with.
Okay.
Swish pattern.
Swish pattern is next. Regardless of what I did on the blue practitioner tape set, if you get that, which I would recommend, don't under any circumstances teach more than one swish pattern at a time. Because the students will get handsomely confused.
Which means at the practitioner level, you just teach the traditional swish where the picture is in the lower left-hand corner, the desired state, the picture of the desired state is in the lower left-hand corner, and the picture of the present state is on the screen. And the desired state explodes big and bright on the screen while the present state recedes and becomes small and dark into the left-hand corner. That's the traditional swish. When you demonstrate on swish pattern, you have to have this slide
You'll need to draw the present state
on the flip chart
and the little desired state in the lower left-hand corner.
However, you will have to add something, which are the arrows.
The arrows.
The direction in which the desire state explodes big and bright on the screen.
The reason the arrows are not on the slide is because the animation takes care of that. It goes like that, yeah?
Sure, absolutely.
Can I demonstrate the switch pattern?
Yep. So here's the present state. That's your present state. This is your desired state, small and dark in this lower left-hand corner. And then what you do, you put the arrows this way.
Probably you'll also, you may want to put
present state associated.
And under desired state, you want to put dissociated.
Dissociated.
Yes. Hold on 1 second. You don't have to demo the switch pattern before they do it. We demo it to show the speed.
I mean, you have to demo it in the demo day, but
you
don't have to demo it
in a training.
We demo it.
We demo it to show the speed. Yes, go ahead. Here's how the script goes.
Good. Good question. Thank you for bringing it up.
Good memory, yeah? Here's how the script goes. Could you have the desired state explode big and bright while it covers up the present state, while the old state shrinks down and becomes small and dark in the lower left-hand corner, and do that as quickly as... Whoosh. That's the script, pretty much. Yeah? So, okay, let's talk about...
Question?
This is exactly what I was about to say. Okay, so we're about to do the demonstration. How do you choose a demonstration subject for switch pattern?
Pre-qualifying for switch.
Here's the question. What is the question, anyway? Okay, who makes pictures in their head? Who wants?
So I'm about to demonstrate the technique called switch pattern, and I need a volunteer.
Who makes pictures in their head?
And you have people raising their arms.
Oh, actually, I think the first thing you'd say is, so you teach switch pattern. You say switch pattern is for modifying
a highly contextualized minor state or behavior.
Minor state or behavior. Highly contextualized minor state or behavior.
Then you ask, who has some minor negative state or a behavior
they
want
to
get
rid of?
That was funny. A minor state, minor negative state.
It also says it on the slide. Yeah.
Or a behavior they want to get rid of. Then you'll have people raising their hands, and then you ask them, okay,
good.
What is it?
What is it?
First question, what is it?
Now, one of the problems that people have with switch pattern is they... At the trainer level, the trainer doesn't pick up, but people try to swish over things of different logical type. So they'll try to swish a state into a behavior. Or a behavior into a...
Or a lack of a behavior.
Yeah.
Or a concept.
Make sure they cannot... Yeah, you can't swish a lack of a behavior. Like, for example, I don't clean up my desk.
That happened in trainers training in London.
Truly happened.
Somebody said, my office desk is a mess. That was the statement. And the trainer to be didn't pick it up. Okay, what would you like to do instead? Nee, 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 nee.
Because it's not a behavior. Yeah? So you got to make sure you're switching a behavior into a behavior or a state into a state. Good.
So then you ask them, what is it? They tell you, what is it?
And you can give them an example. Here are the only two examples that I ever give, ever. Like, for example, so a switch pattern is most useful for a highly contextualized state of behavior. Like, for example, biting your nails, or the boss looks at you in a certain way and you feel funny.
This is more than enough at the practitioner level.
Those are the only two examples I ever give. You can give more examples, but more examples than that are often fraught with other options beyond what you want. So, you clearly sort it out. Oh, grinding teeth, yeah. Grinding teeth is a good example.
Another good example is grinding teeth.
Grinding your teeth. Yes. Could be.
Could be.
Switch pattern will still work for it. If I were doing a therapy with someone, I probably would do...
letting go of anger.
Anger. Let's see. So, switch pattern.
So we are at the pre-qualifying. So they tell you what is it, the minor state or behavior.
Before they come up, you go... So you say, what is it? They say it's a state. You say, good, what's the state? Blah, blah, blah. What would you like to do instead?
And then before you have them up on stage, you have to ask them the question for finding out the trigger.
How do you know it's time to?
And the question is, how do you know it's time
to... We'll use biting nails as an example.
Bite your nails.
How do you know it's time to bite your nails?
After you finish writing, I will ask you please to look up and pay attention because you will have to do a sensitivity analysis here. And you will have to demonstrate this. And the sensitivity analysis goes this way. See, if you catch up the picture of biting nails when it's already here, it's too late.
Too late.
When you swish up the picture of biting nails when the hand's down,
here,
maybe too early.
You haven't caught the trigger.
So you know you cannot swish anything else but the picture of the trigger. In order to have a successful swish pattern, please write that down. Please, I beg you. This is the most important thing you need to do in a swish pattern.
Get the trigger.
You need to find the trigger and elicit the picture.
So let's say that Adriana is
let them write first.
Biting her nails.
Just give them 2 minutes. I don't bite my nails, by the way.
Exactly. Let's say we're doing this with her.
Hypothetically.
We can tell you don't bite your nails.
Yep.
Either that or if you do bite your nails, you're chewing a lot of paint. Reddish paint at that.
How do you know it's yummy?
I don't know it's yummy. Is it yummy?
No.
Oh. Never had
it. Okay, ready?
So, you go like this. Look up. Is it time to bite your nails yet? No. Is it time to bite your nails yet? No. Is it time to bite your nails yet? No. Is it time to bite your nails yet? No. Is it time to bite your nails yet? Yes. How about that? No. How about that? Yes. Good. Guess what that is? That's your picture of the trigger associated. So you move her hand with your hand for nail biting. Do you know it's time to bite your nails? You know it's time to bite your nails? You know it's time to bite your nails? So you move her hand until it's just at the right point. Then you know she knows, and you calibrate her for knowing. Yes. How do you know it's time to? Again, the question for the swish is, how do you know it's time to? I don't know. Make something up. Yeah. No?
No.
If he walks in the room with a frown, do you know it's time to feel funny? If the answer is yes... Then let's say, so you want to, does that always happen? Does he ever walk into the room with a frown and you don't feel funny? So you're going to do sensitivity analysis. I'm just making it up. I don't know what I would say, but I would do to see. So maybe if he walks in from the door behind your desk, if he comes in from behind you, do you know it's? I mean, so you could check the submodality angles. I don't know.
In other words, you have to chunk down into very specifics. What has the boss on his physiognomy that makes you feel funny?
What is he? Yeah. What's
he doing? What's he saying? What's happening? Maybe he has to have a certain body posture and has to say a certain set of words. And that specifically is the picture. Yes.
Is it the tilt of the head?
Whatever it is.
Now, some people would be tempted to say, what would you like to have happen instead? And you say, I'd like to have the boss smile at me. That's not something we can control with a switch pattern. So the question is, what would you like to do instead? The boss is still looking at them funny, but now they have a picture dissociated of themselves doing something else.
Something positive.
So the present state's associated, the desired state's dissociated. And it will be more like what they want.
So because, hold on just a second, because we are at the trigger, if you get an answer like, how do you know it's time to feel better? How do you know it's time to bite your nails? And they say, I feel anxious, or I feel a certain, whatever that is, which is a kinesthetic answer, then the next question, the very next question you ask them is, how do you know it's time to feel that way? If you don't have a picture, you cannot do a swish.
This is also important from the point of view of, actually, we didn't say that earlier. It's also important from the point of view of nail biting. You will get some nail biters up there. Look up for a second. And that you'll say, how do you know it's time to bite their nails? And they'll say, when I feel this right here like this. Now listen carefully. They didn't know it was time to do this until something happened that preceded that. People don't sit around and do this. I've observed people for quite a while now. And people who don't bite their nails don't sit around doing this. So how did the person who's biting their nails know it was time to do that? It's got to come off a visual. If it doesn't come off a visual, don't have that person for a demo. It's got to come off a visual. So there's something that priest, how do you know? So he says, well, I rub my finger on my nail cuticle.
So how do you know it's time to rub your finger on your nail cuticle?
Comma, do you have a picture?
Do you have a picture?
You want to get the picture that causes them to know it's time. They may insist they don't have a picture. You will need to equally insist that they have to.
Yeah.
So I've had people come up to me and say, I don't make any pictures. Good. So how do you know it's time to bite your nails? Well, I feel my nail here like this. Yeah, but how do you know it's time to feel your nail? I don't know. I just do.
Now, for some people, the picture may be so unconscious that it will take you up to half an hour to elicit the picture. Now, that's probably the wrong person to pick as a demo subject. It will take way too long.
Because it'll take your students a half an hour.
We had one client once, which absolutely we felt it was necessary to do a swish pattern. It took us about 25 minutes to elicit the picture. It was so unconscious, so out of awareness. But ultimately, he came up with the real picture. I didn't even know I was doing that. Of course not. It was out of awareness.
And if he'd known he was doing it, he wouldn't have done it.
So. Yes.
Yes. Same with auditory, yes.
Yes.
Visual. You only do as a demo, only do a swish pattern with visual.
If they'll ask you, okay, but what do I do if I don't make pictures and whatever, then you can say to them, there is a bunch of techniques in NLP, and probably you heard us saying this, there's a bunch of techniques in NLP, and not every technique applies to every person.
If you don't make pictures in your head, you can't probably do visual submodality manipulation.
Therefore, probably for you, would be better to do...
Collapse anchors.
Anchors.
Collapse anchors are primarily for people who are kinesthetic. Submodalities are primarily for people who are visual.